parameters to control the CPU with the user's cap, and with and you also dynamically allocate memory, and also we identified some techniques to allocate I/O bandwidth or partition I/O bandwidth to some extent, not very hard partitioning, but somehow maintain the I/O bandwidth. Did some techniques to share the I/O bandwidth among virtual machines. So that's the main thing. So until now we ran application inside a virtual machine. That is, we ran Postmark inside a virtual machine. So what we did is that we give them a bunch of allocation parameters, and we observed what is the application output depending on those parameters or resources given to the virtual machine, and we observed the application output. So what our model is doing is that it's the artificial neural network based model. That's what we investigated. So what it does is that you give the set, the training set, and later on when you give random by a bunch of the parameters, the allocation parameter, you give predicts the what is the application output at that instant for that allocation set. So I think that's what we achieved so far. And what we compared is that we compared the actual experimental result with the predicted result from the artificial neural network. And so far we achieved up to 5% accuracy on average.
Do you have a detailed report?
It's
on the introduction, I don't see any data.
I don't have the data on the introduction, but I have lots of data in my Excel graph, and I can share it with you.
Yeah, that might be a good idea, is to start composing a results section with where you describe each experiment very briefly, what you did in the experiment.
And also some,
and
what is some modern feature of something, right? What is the parameter we used? And
right, so specify the details of the experiment and also include the figures or the graphs for the various experiments that you did. I think this would also be a good exercise for you to review all the work that you've done and consolidate all of your work in one place.
Yeah, I think on that direction, I'll go a little bit ahead on that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably I'll go ahead in saying, okay, if you can write the, if it's not too much work,
mm-hmm.
that you can say, write the architecture or what kind of experiment you did, then experimental study, like a kind of conference paper kind of thing, because he has done a lot of work on this
mm-hmm.
one when
mm-hmm.
we did the last one. So that we can use that as the initial conference work to just get an initial feedback, and also as a basis for progressing further into this direction probably.
Yeah, what I wanted to do today is to just for us to revisit the goals of the project
mm-hmm.
and to see if the goals of the project can either be fine-tuned or expanded in scope so that we have a stronger piece of work. And I think once we resolve that, I certainly agree that we should start putting together some methodology section where we discuss the approach that was taken, or if there are multiple approaches, then talk about that and so on. So, but before we do methodology, I would still want to review the sort of basic goals of the project.
So the problem statement.
The problem statement and the contribution in very specific terms.
But what is the basic goal? Do you mean about confined to that particular work, or you're talking about the broader goal?
Yeah, the broader goal, I would say, because, I mean, it certainly is important for this paper to be put into perspective.
Yeah.
Rather than say, okay, here's what we did and this is what we have, right? I think the paper, the research paper has to be also, take into account what is the area and what are the approaches that have been considered in the past. And although we are considering this, we did certain experiments, what is the class of problems that we can address if we follow along these lines? So for instance, you say artificial neural network, but in fact, there is no reason, no particular reason that we picked artificial neural network at this point. So we say we did artificial neural network and we found that average accuracy is 5%. As a reviewer, my first question would be, what if you had used some other method? Would you have had better accuracy or worse accuracy? What is it about artificial neural network that made it so special if you chose it and did only experiments with that? I think a safer bet would be to say that, well, here's the key contribution of this work is in identifying the basic parameters itself, not really training a model based on those parameters. Because we are using an external tool, an artificial neural network, that's going to make the predictions for us. But to come up with the parameters in the first place and showing techniques to estimate those parameters on real systems, I think that's where the real contribution of this work is, right? And so that's sort of the phase one of what you described. So you split the thing into two phases. And then there is the second phase, which might itself have some interesting contributions as well. So that's sort of the general direction I wanted to have for our discussion today. And once we know how we want to sell this work and how we want to present this work, then we can have a more sort of, rich methodology section where we not just focused on what we did so far, but also have a perspective and have a wider coverage of a sort of more broader view of this work. Should reflect in each of the sections going forward.
Yeah, I get on that. The reason I was asking this broader question is that because when we started this research, we started from the broader goal of managing the virtualized environment. That's the very high level goal.
Right.
Now from there we came down to do that we need to model each of the machines or each of the applications, and that's the short term goal that we fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
So absolutely, and that was really important, right? Because we went ahead and identified those parameters.
Yeah, of course.
And
usually we started with a couple of parameters and we had to change the parameters later on.
Right.
So that definitely should be a contribution.
Yeah. So bringing that sort of discussion where we say, okay, here is what we started off with, but then we realize, I mean, that may be of value as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also important to put this whole work in perspective of the original goal of the project. And I think which you do to some extent, but when you start talking about specifics like ANN and so on, I think that maybe sort of we don't have to talk about these specifics in the introduction, but just talk about the overall approach and where the key contributions are.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that?
Well, to give an introduction to, you're saying that we need to somehow say that what is the methodology we used,
right,
in the introduction as well. And our goal is also identification of parameter is one part, but also the modeling accuracy is another part of the work, right?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the introduction should specify the accuracy that we achieved and so on. But what I'm trying to say is that, for instance, just picking ANN and doing experiments with ANN is not enough.
Okay.
We need to probably look at some alternative techniques and say, we used ANN, but we are not tied to ANN. We use something else as well, and then we use something else as well. I mean, this is just a question of using a tool, right? So you don't need to do any of the experiments again. You already have all the data. We just need to say, well, instead of using ANN, if I use a different prediction mechanism, what is the accuracy?
So, for example, I did the linear linear regression using experiments. So that was very worse. So maybe we can. When you write the experimental section, probably we can bring that into the picture. Really, that okay, this is or before that even. That is okay. This is what will happen, because when you're talking about the modeling, anyone can say, okay, why don't you just use simple multiple regression? Mm-hmm. we can say, okay, this is what the result for the multiple regression, this is the result for the ANN. Maybe that will add a little bit of value.
Mm.
Maybe we can pick something else also. Really. Really.
Well, there is, I guess, non-linear regression perhaps, which I don't know how that really works, but I've heard of people doing multiple non-linear regression.
You can go for quadratic regression.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I guess the point is that we should, in the introduction itself, we should state clearly that it's not just the reason for this writing this paper is not because we got this great accuracy with ANN, but because we identified the parameters, we did experiments with different prediction mechanisms and found these different accuracies, and maybe one or two of which is acceptable. So, yeah, so I think that would make the introduction more in our benefit. So people don't look for contributions in the wrong place. Okay, so the second phase, which is you sort of break that up, is that do we have significant contributions there?
We haven't even talked about that phase at all.
Okay.
Which was I missed it?
This is in his introduction. That's how Sajeev has presented it. He broke up the process into two phases. And so before we move on, Ming, do you have any questions or?
Yes,
about the writing or anything that we discussed?
I should have many questions about details.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to wait for...
I think we can better picturize the thing in a board. I mean, what we are trying to do actually.
Okay.
What is our overall goal or what we have
go
started?
Ahead. Go ahead, please. Can you erase this? Yeah, go ahead and erase that. Yeah, sure.
You're talking about the third one. The model also aims to maximize the overall profit for the data centers. That one you're talking about.
Right, there is the phase one and phase two. Somewhere here. In the second phase. Yeah.
Well, we didn't do that yet.
Which is fine, I think. It's also an important contribution. If we can achieve that, that would be important. That would be useful. So one comment I had was, when you say I/O, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are all different types of I/O. And in fact, people in the networking community do not believe that disk I/O is I/O. They say the I/O means network I/O. So, so you have to clarify what you mean when you say I/O.
Deliberately do it.
You deliberately do that?
Yeah.
To say, okay, by I/O we only mean disk I/O?
No, I want to generalize.
Oh, you want to generalize?
Because by so far we identify how to control the disk I/O, not the network I/O.
Okay.
That's how.
Yeah, you want to generalize, but I guess what you mean when you say I/O here is all disk I/O, right?
Right.
Because that's what we are able to control.
Exactly.
But can we control network I/O, or is that not possible?
What techniques did you use
for I/O bandwidth? First, I just want to give you what is the overall goal of the project. Our goal is basically that you have several virtual machines sharing a single physical host. So you're sharing actually CPU, memory, and network as well as disk bandwidth. So our goal is that we want to distribute the reach and think about that each virtual machine is running a sole application. So for example, you have to run an OLTP benchmark that's running inside it. It's running some network intensive benchmark. So each application has its own virtual machine. And each client and all of this virtual machine has its own service level agreement. So what we want to do is that we want to distribute the resources in such a way that the overall, for example, think about this virtual machine one, you give some allotted resources to it, and it for that resource allocation, you give some application performance. You obtain some performance.
Mm-hmm.
And that performance, if you, in terms of SLA, will give you some amount in dollars for the data center business operations. So that's applicable for all of the virtual machines. So what's our overall goal? We talked about that we want to distribute the resources in such a fashion that the amount in dollars across all the virtual machines is maximized. Okay. That's our overall goal.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the thing.
That's accurate.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want? What if we cannot optimize all the virtual machines? You have to do a trade-off. What do you do?
Do a trade-off?
Yeah, what if you don't have enough resources to maximize each virtual machine's SLA, right? What do you do?
Well, for example, we have 4 VMs, or instead of that, you have 6 VMs.
Mm-hmm.
So even in that scenario, if we have 6 VMs, for that particular 6 virtual machine, we have to maximize that output in that case. So if a VM starts, or VM is shut down, or say, for example, a client is withdrawn from our operation, so now that we have 5 virtual machines, so for 5 virtual machines, we will maximize the output in that case.
I think what Ming is saying is that you cannot achieve the maximum output for each VM simultaneously. Okay. What we want to achieve is the global maxima, not the local maxima for each of the
VMs. Oh, okay.
That's actually what I asked.
The maximization of the sum
of
the dollar amounts across each virtual machine.
Go ahead. So that's our overall goal. So far we focused on, because to do that, we need to first understand, okay, given an application, given a set of allocations, what is the application performance metric?
Yes.
Or the application output?
Mm-hmm.
So for that we used, we identified that how we can control a virtual machine. So we identified 4 parameters because we are using the Zen VMN.
Mm-hmm.
So we identified 4 parameters that
mm-hmm.
the cap
mm-hmm.
to control the CPU.
Mm-hmm.
Memory is just a memory comment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for disk IO, mm-hmm. there is the command that IO9.
Oh, nice.
So think about that each virtual machine, when you run a virtual machine, each virtual machine to the physical host is a process.
Mm.
Is a process. So when a virtual machine is run, so all its IO is handled by a specific process.
In domain zero.
In domain zero.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Mm.
So we identified that if we, because IO9 is a CPU nice thing, so it just prioritizes, gives some extra priority to a virtual machine.
How effective is that using IO9?
We have some results of that. So you can really control the performance of a virtual machine based on IO9.
Yeah, but what's the accuracy? So if I just want to give 20% of the IO, disk binaries to a particular virtual machine, what's the accuracy of that control?
Thing is that IO9 will cannot hardly partition.
It's priority based.
It's a priority
based.
When you have competition
mm-hmm.
among a contention from virtual machine, it will give higher priority to a virtual machine having better IO9.
So you have talked about only 3 parameters so far.
I'm coming into the 4th parameter. So what's my point that actually you found that it cannot, because IO9 is based on contention.
Mm-hmm.
But using only IO9, we found that the accuracy is very bad
mm-hmm.
for controlling the IO.
Mm-hmm.
Because the IO9 singly cannot handle the, or cannot, account all the IOs in the disk.
Mm-hmm.
So what we, so along with the IO nights, we used another parameter.
Mm.
That's the IO from other domains or other virtual machines.
What do you mean?
Can you write the parameters down clearly?
Okay. So IO from other fields is meaning that, for example, because the disk bandwidth is very shared and there is no hard partitioning even in virtual machine environment to control the sharing of disk bandwidth. So when you have more contention from other virtual machine, we observe that the application performance is degraded. And when you have lesser contention from other virtual machine, even with the same allocation parameter, you have extra output, especially for an IO intensive benchmark. That's why we identify that IO from other virtual machine can be an other parameter to the model.
So you just monitor the bytes in, bytes out from
exactly.
The other virtual machines. Okay.
It's not a controllable parameter.
Right.
It's only observable parameter.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I'm just thinking for control, maybe you can try the DM band module. People have some success with that.
Which module?
What is the DM band? DM is a module of the device micro framework.
Mm-hmm.
So you can create a virtual device, and it gives the interface to all your disks, and then you can, with DM band, which is the module that implements the virtual device, can control the bandwidth of the different channels to the hard disk. I think that's what I learned about that.
Okay, that's something we should look into then. Can you forward the pointer to...
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
DM-band.
DM.
Yeah. DM is for device mapper. It's a generic tool. It's a generic Linux tool. But you can install down at that on domain zero to control your bandwidth to hard disk.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. For that, you need some sort of support from the IO scheduler, right?
So the scheduling, scheduling is down at the DM band. So
okay.
It's a device driver, kind of like a device driver.
I see.
So you present this virtual device on top of the device mapper, and that virtual device is controlled by DM band.
Okay.
So all your IO go through the DM band module, we start the scheduling.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, so that we identified that four parameters can account for all the factors that control the application performance running inside a virtual machine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What kind of applications are you considering?
I consider it with Postmark.
Postmark, okay. So far, only for all the experiments you have done so far,
with the postmark? Yeah.
Okay. I see. Because I'm thinking, even for the performance metrics, that can be tricky. The different applications can have different metrics.
That's true. So, for instance, for each application, you would have to have some specification of the performance metric as well.
Right.
So, with Postmark, it's
transactions
per second, and there are other metrics as well, even with Postmark.
Yeah, I think the application performance metrics. May be different, but what is more important to see is whether the input parameters are same or not. Today we're using Postmark. If we use some other benchmark and see whether we can predict the application performance on that, whatever the metric is in that particular benchmark, with the same four parameters, or we need to identify for fifth parameter, or we need to replace one of the parameters.
Right.
What's the case in that case? So if we can run, say for example, one memory intensive, one CPU intensive, one IO intensive, and in all the cases we find that, okay, these four parameters are invariant of whatever the application is, that itself is a huge, that itself is a contribution actually. And if you can say that, okay, my model can, my way of modeling the thing, approach, my way of modeling the application can model all four types of applications,
mm-hmm.
whether it's a CPU, memory, or IO intensive.
Mm-hmm.
Then
actually, that's a key, that could be a key contribution of our art, because so far what related paper we have studied, so they specifically picked up one particular set of application.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, they picked up a database application.
Right.
And they modeled they modeled based on the database application. And they took some of the advantages from database itself to model their environment.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying that their solution may not be generic for all applications.
In your study, do you consider all the applications being static or have different parameters, different inputs, or different workloads? Do you consider those dynamics? Even for
postmodern, I think for experiments, I use the static.
No,
it varies the workload.
No.
It varies the workload?
No.
So, the way I see it is that we are looking at some sort of history
mm-hmm.
of the application.
Right.
And assume mm-hmm. that the application is mostly stable over the observation period,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you create a model of the application
right.
behavior.
Right.
But you cannot say, well, I'm going to create a model and then I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to allow any changes to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can continue observing and refine your model. Maybe
mm-hmm.
the application itself has changed
mm-hmm.
because applications are dynamic. So
yes.
So I think that brings a very important question, which is, well, how do we take into account the dynamic nature of applications?
Yes.
And is there a straightforward way to deal with it?
No.
So, yeah, I'm glad that we are having this discussion, because this was my goal, is to find out how we can refine the contributions and what could be potential contributions
mm-hmm.
that are interesting. I think one thing which we identified was which we already knew, more or less, which is we wanted to identify the parameters of the model, the minimal number of parameters of the model, although these four parameters are not everything. I think we need maybe two more parameters for the network as well. I mean, just like we partition disk and account for computation for the disk, we have to partition network and account for computation on the network. I think so we'll end up with two more parameters, but are six enough? So that's the first question. And are these six sufficient to describe many classes of applications? Right. So I think that's where we go into the first contribution. The second would be, well, how do we take into account the dynamic nature of the application and how to refine the model, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's two. Maybe there is a third one.
Yeah, the reason I'm asking the dynamics in applications because so currently I'm also doing some related work, very related to this, but I find it challenging to simply how to describe the application. This is already a very challenging task. For instance, if you think about a database, and the database, if you want to characterize this workload, it's very difficult to do that. For a web server, maybe easier. You can use request rate. That's a simple start, but for databases, you cannot just use query rate because query rate are so different.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the same thing for PostMark, if you give different
parameters,
inputs, right, the read to write ratio, the query to deletion ratio, and the random, how do you randomize the all those transactions? I think change in the input can make a huge difference on the performance and the resource consumption of the application.
I think that can be addressed in different ways. It's not whatever the problem we discussed is really complex problem. Trying to define the workload for a database is a super complex problem.
Right.
That is still a problem. But the way I remember one discussion we had is the way we are approaching is, if you think about a half an hour duration of the application, then that half an hour duration, if you average that on top of half an hour, then that behavior of the application remains almost static for most of the application.
So that I agree. Yeah, I agree.
So we are relying more on the on the longer duration, because if you when you're thinking about the dollar benefit from SLA, you're thinking not in terms of every second or every minute variations, but you're talking about half an hour or one hour variation
Yeah, I agree with totally. I totally agree with that. I think the underlying assumption, there is a certain trend that we can capture.
Exactly.
Without that assumption, there's no need for research.
Exactly.
If everything is random.
No, that is one of the assumptions we made.
But I'm thinking why we need to consider the parameters of the application as parameters. So far, the parameters you are considering are just performance or result parameters. You're not considering anything about the application. So if you want to capture the changes in the application, or maybe to create a model, you know, that can characterize the relationship between the application's characteristics and the resource consumption characteristics, maybe you have to consider the parameters that are related to the applications. That's just a thought.
That's a very important point. And so there are different ways of looking at this problem.
Mm-hmm.
One argument is that there may be scenarios where you cannot know the application parameters.
Right.
If you're running the data center, you don't have any knowledge of the application except for the performance metrics which are required to guarantee SLA. So, and then it becomes hard, well, how much can the data center operators actually monitor about the application?
Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
And how much can they know about the application?
Mm-hmm.
So there is, I believe, some merit in being agnostic of the application as much as possible.
And also remember that when you're talking about the SLAs are determined by the application behavior. If you are running a data center, and if I'm being an application manager, and I create an agreement on the SLA that you need to give me this much of the responsibility or something like that, and if I change my application, that SLA cannot remain stable.
Mm-hmm.
The SLA needs to be also changed. You will say that, okay, your application has changed, so let me run this application in my staging environment and then see what is the resources it is taking, and accordingly I can give you a guarantee on the SLA that I can provide you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So in that nature, I think to a certain extent, the dynamic nature of the application is very important, but to a certain extent, I think we can defend or we can restrict ourselves with the static applications kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we make everything open, then the problem really, really, really complex, almost unsolvable kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point, but I think it is important to address this issue.
Oh yeah, it's in
our discussion somehow.
Of course, absolutely.
If in fact we can show that the model is something which is can adapt. I mean, if we can show that the model can adapt, then
there are a couple of things we can show. We can show the sensitivity of the model to the dynamic nature of the application. We can say that okay, if some of the application characteristics, say for example, just simplify the database workload, the query per second or something like that. I mean, if we say that okay, if the query workload changes this much, then our model, our performance will be worse from 5% to 15% probably. If we can say that, then that will be something like that we can say.
Yeah, I mean, and we can show that, for instance, we run the same benchmark with different loads. Right?
Yeah.
So we can run, what is that, Postmark, or we can run TPC. OLTP benchmark with different request rates, and we show that, well, the models are completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And we can also show that, you know, these models can be learned online, just purely based on observation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all we're observing is the performance metric in the end, and the resource consumption. And we are saying that we really don't care about how the internal behavior of the application is, or the parameters of the application.
Mm-hmm.
We just take into account the external observables and the resources that are given.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and as the external, if the resources remain the same and the performance metric changes, what it means that the behavior of the application has changed. And if we can adapt the model to reflect that change, well, then we have a more up-to-date model now.
Mm-hmm.
And we can use the more up-to-date model to make future decisions.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, I think there's definitely merits of being agnostic to applications. A third question is, your current implementation, how long does it take to train the network?
Neural network?
Yes.
Yeah. How many points do you need?
How much data and how much time do you need to train? In order to be adaptive, you have to be fast.
No, the training itself, to run the tool for the network algorithm tool is very fast.
Okay.
It's a matter of seconds.
Okay.
The data set is really important. You need to cover a range of allocation parameters to train you, because the training is very important to actual prediction.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot give you an exact figure, because there is no exact figure. The more data you can feed, the better your model is trained.
You may also need to consider what happens if the network is not well trained. What happens if you are in an online situation and the model is giving you bad prediction? You need some backup plan, right? Or some way to speed up your training process. I don't know, if some other mechanisms to handle that situation.
So we did talk about that right at the very beginning of this project, which is that the fact that we have control on all those input parameters, right? So we can artificially change these parameters over short durations and observe their effects, and then get extra points. But of course, it could be that, well, maybe for a short period you violate the SLA, or you get reduced dollars, but you trade that dollars for having a more efficient model for the longer term, right? So you could do some of those things in terms of getting more training points.
Yeah.
Now those are, I think, very good points, and we should take these into account when we, especially when we, in the introductory part of the paper, because these are really the hard problems that we need to address in this paper.
Yeah. Maybe we can highlight the advantage of being elastic applications.
Yeah.
You have to cover your base and then bring out that aspect.
I think that's what I mentioned in a line, right? That you don't have to need any application details for modeling technique.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't emphasized that much actually.
Yeah. That's actually how.
So we are treating each VM as a black box.
Right. This is how your approach is different from
others.
Yeah.
So I think, what we realized with our experiments was that taking into account the competing behavior of the other VMs is extremely important for the accuracy.
Yes.
And there are some resources that are very easily partitioned that you don't really have to worry about computation, such as CPU and memory. You have very fixed allocations, and but with I/O, network, and disk, we have this other problem.
The CPU is somehow not, it's very hard partition. I mean, it's easily partitioned, but it's not very easy, because remember that at the last phase of our experimentation, we found that we need to somehow leave some amount of CPU for the domain zero.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Especially if you are running IOTA.
Exactly.
Yeah.
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 Because we did some experiments and show that if it gives too less CPU to the domain zero, or the application performance is actually degraded.
Yeah.
So can we also take that as an additional parameter, or I think we talked about taking.
I tried it, but the modeling accuracy doesn't. And the model is not accurate enough, and I guess so. At the end, we decided leave some amount of
just statically
allocate some amount of CPU for
domain.
Yeah, left aside kind of thing.
Yeah,
and that was happening because of the CPU that domain zero was creating the I/O bottleneck, because that was the I/O sensitive, pretty much I/O intensive application.
Static allocation may not be a good idea to run I/O intensive application.
Static allocation of CPU for domain zero.
Right, that's what I mean, yeah. Actually, there is a paper
there is a paper studying the effect of allocating different amount of CPU to domain zero, the effect on the I/O performance. That's paper it's called, what's the name? Comparison of three I/O schedulers, something like that. Yeah, compare you, giving different ratio, different amount of CPU to DOM zero, and using different parameters for the I/O scheduler in there, and how's the overall performance. The
but actually taking it into in the modeling itself is very complex.
Mm-hmm.
It will make the model more complex. So we can address the problem that say that why we fix the allocation of domain zero.
Mm-hmm.
So we can say that okay, we have identified that giving this amount is sufficient enough to.
Mm-hmm. Since you are already considering the I/O shelf for the other virtual machines, you can just use similarly add another parameter is the CPU shelf of DOM zero.
That's what so he did try that already.
Uh-huh.
And so I guess that he was trying to say that with that the model accuracy is not improving.
I see. Okay.
Using that as a parameter because I think it's a step function.
Mm.
So if you, or rather, it should sort of a very weird function that
mm-hmm.
it's not linear.
I see.
So, and so if you allocate a certain amount, more than that amount does not affect.
Doesn't matter.
But you need at least a certain amount, and below that, it's highly variable. So, it's not easy to model the effect of CPU allocation to domain zero.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I know the paper you're talking about. This
mm-hmm.
is from the guys in EPFL, right? Or the Switzerland. Willy Zwinepol and those guys.
I'm not so sure, but I can look it up. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, for instance, I mean, we have to illustrate with some application that also uses network. And one way to do that would be, let's say, to use. But for that
you need the network control first, isn't it? You need a way to control the network.
We need a way to control the network, that's true.
Because that was one open issue that we left initially aside.
Yeah, one thing which we could do is just use NICE. Because each...
I'm not sure how do you NICE it because you think that its network also has a net
process.
Network
back. Yeah. Netback process, just like we have lockback
process,
and with netback, maybe just controlling the priority of the process would help us control the bandwidth of the network.
Yeah,
that's one possibility.
Very similar to these I/O.
Yeah, similar to I/O NICE, but use a regular NICE.
Mm-hmm.
And for an application, we could use any application, you know, even Postmark, but all the files are on NFS
mm-hmm.
on a remote machine.
Okay.
So that could be something. yeah, I think for a paper like this to have an easy time actually making it into a good conference, we had to address the breadth of issues
mm-hmm.
and also make it robust for answering some of these questions that we've been raising, make sure that we have experiments that stress all the different aspects of the model, all the parameters, for instance, different types of applications. I think that would make a really nice paper. So, I mean, I would encourage you to have a more sort of more ambitious goal at this point, more holistic view than what you have in the introduction right now. So rethink how you would write the introduction based on our discussion today.
So a couple of clear-cut things probably can do. One is trying to find out how the network can be controlled. That's one aspect. I think at least trying with another application probably. Because I don't think a paper just with Postmark will
apply.
Why did the benchmark will be fine? Huh? It stresses everything.
Yes, probably true.
A more realistic benchmark.
Yeah.
Which one? TPCC or TPCW.
Mm.
But it's not IO intensive. It's everything now. It's overall, anything. It stresses CPU, memory, and IO as well.
IO maybe networks. not disks, but TBCW. It's not disk I witness. It's
easy insights, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not as I intensive as Postmark, but
in that sense, yeah. I'm assuming that the database would be stored on the local disk and tested.
Yeah.
That's a similar thing we use for the TPC database in Java previous report. So
I think we use TPCC, right?
TPCC. That's computer intensive.
TPCC is disk intensive.
What is TPCC? C for?
It's for, I don't know what C for, but it's in the old store and warehouse benchmark.
Okay, yeah, I probably haven't heard about TPCC. I know TPCW, TPCH. I know at least in TPCH, which is a database benchmark, there are quite some IO intensive queries. Probably more intensive than TPCW, right? But if you already have Postmark, probably don't need that.
And some other, simple applications, CPU intensive or memory intensive applications.
Yeah, that's LMH.
Yeah. I think those would add value to the paper as well. So we can show that there are a range of different classes of applications.
Yeah, that is very important because just with the Postman, it is very.
Yeah, you probably need to have at least three
types of applications.
Three different classes of applications.
And one realistic benchmark.
Yeah, so. Okay, so what are next steps, Ajit?
The next step will be to, that's the thing, to start with networking, controlling network, and also at the same time, parallelly, to model another benchmark.
Will this game band help in network, are you? Controlling the network?
That's for disk, right?
Yeah, disk. That's for disk.
Yeah.
Storage devices.
Yeah, the thing about the DM band, though, is that it's basically partitioning of the disk IO bandwidth, right?
Yes.
Now, if you want to make a system that's worth conserving, which means that if there is free bandwidth, you want to utilize it, then you have to take into account IO competition, regardless of whether you can partition the bandwidth or not.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would envision is that instead of using an IO nice parameter, we use a parameter that is used to control the DM band.
That's kind of similar to caps if you cap.
Mm-hmm.
When you see your cap, you are now free three cycles to be used by the other domains. If you can.
No, that cap is hard part
wise, so it's similar to the event.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard cap.
Mm.
I think there are a couple of caps, different types of cap, but we used a cap that is hard cap.
Hard cap, yeah.
Mm. Remember, there are a couple of other caps that can use the free CPUs.
Yeah, I guess the reason we are using a hard cap is because we want to train it.
Yeah.
Not necessarily because that's how the system will be used in the end. In the end, maybe it won't be a hard cap, but what we can do is use the observation of the average CPU utilization over the past interval to predict for the future. Right? But to train the system, you have to enforce these resource limits so that you can get robust performance metric.
So, in that sense, when you are training, you use these control parameters, and when you go online, you use your monitored parameters, right?
That's right.
So there's a switch there.
Yeah. That's true. And that is something which should be clarified as well. That the training, the way we are doing the training, is not necessarily.
Well, some of the parameters are already observed. For example,
IOS from other domains is already an observed parameter.
Some of them are already observed.
And memory is
very sweet.
Well, the other thing which we might want to consider is that if we want to talk about online training, we can control the parameters, but most of the training is probably going to be because of observed parameters alone. You can just say, well, how much is the CPU utilization in the last interval, how much was the average memory, how much was
memory,
and so on.
Can you measure?
Yeah, no, cost. Well, you can look at what was the allocation, right?
Only the allocation. I mean, but the memory allocation inside a virtual machine, I don't think you can measure, right?
Yeah, that's going to be too intrusive.
That's right.
I think we did. We talked about that before.
We talked about the CPU.
No, we talked about looking, even in the runtime, we talked about looking at the allocated resources, not the usage resources.
Yeah.
So we are never looking at the actual usage. We're always looking at the
allocations. Correct.
Both in the training and in the runtime.
For CPU as well. If your CPU is 20%, it uses only 10%. We still use the
20%.
But in the observed case, I mean, we could possibly use 10%, right? So the observations could be more accurate.
I don't know, but I think in that case the model will probably change because you cannot use the allocated value, allocated model, and use the observed value to find out the predictive value.
Right.
Because in that case, it will not match.
So what you are saying in effect is that.
You have to be consistent. If you use the observable, you have to use the observable in the runtime. If you use the allocated value, you have to use the allocated value in the runtime. You have to use the same thing.
That's a good point.
But even in case, that doesn't prevent us to change during runtime and observe. And run the model during the runtime, because even in the runtime there is an allocated model, there is an allocated value, and that allocated value may change. Really.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So right now you have a combination. You have both observed and allocated.
That's another way of adding the control. We can have another set of parameters for the observed value. So you can have a set of values for the allocated and then the set of values for the observed and then use the whole thing as a model parameter.
If you can observe everything, you can observe the actual resource consumption for all different kinds of resources, then you don't really need to consider the allocated resources anymore.
That's a good point. The only thing is that the allocated is more stable than the observed. The actual utilization is very dynamic. CPU can be fairly dynamic. And I think that it's a challenge to actually capture the observed.
What value will pick up this?
You have to
average mean and also.
And then your resolution of observation also plays in a lot.
Yes. Because the observed parameter becomes so dynamic in the real life applications.
Right.
Actually, we also did experience this
with observed.
Yeah,
I think we started off with something like that, and
but we saw that even with the same, more or less same application output, observed CPU utilization may vary a lot.
And
sometimes the observed CPU utilization doesn't match. I mean, you may have to say that okay, if you use great one CPU, your application performance metric should be higher. But actually, we saw that it doesn't match.
I'd love to see your results, because the way I have been doing is to, I've always been using observed values in terms of both application workload and the resource consumption, and that's how we have done it. But yeah, I look forward to see your results.
So do you, since you are sort of the virtualization expert and probably read much more than us, So what do you see as the sort of the novelty of this work?
Being transparent to application, that's definitely one merit, because as you mentioned that the data center managers, they don't have a lot of detail, knowledge about what kind of application they're running and how to fine-tune the application. They don't know the details about their workloads or their parameters. If you can be agnostic to applications and at the same time achieve a very good and more prediction, that's definitely a contribution. And that's something I haven't seen before.
What do you mean? Because you have a broad knowledge on the virtualization, so the question is, do you see some contribution coming out of this research?
Right. Yes. Absolutely. Yes. I personally, I'm going the other route. I'm trying to know more about education. That's how I'm doing it. So the project I'm currently working on is actually to predict the resource consumption for a database,
mm-hmm.
you know, virtual machine. And I'm trying very hard to characterize the database workloads, and at the same time trying very hard to build a model that can represent the relationship between the workload representation and the actual resource consumption. That's what I'm trying to do. And in order to do that, you know, recognizing that database is a piece of complex software, so I'm trying to use knowledge that is available in the DBMS in order to help me, you know, characterize the workload and build up my model. That's my way, you know, because I think for application that you really want to optimize, you probably need some knowledge of it in order to achieve the best control and optimization in that sense. But on the other hand, if you don't have this kind of knowledge and you want to support a wider variety of applications, right, with the same approach, you have to somehow be agnostic to applications. Otherwise, you probably don't have, you know, you just don't have the knowledge available to you.
So I guess what you are, the approach that, to put it in a slightly different way, is that, so you model the resource consumption,
mm-hmm.
and then, so given the parameters of the application, you model resource consumption,
mm-hmm.
as the input parameter,
right.
And given the observations of the resource consumption,
yes.
mm-hmm. you model the performance.
Yes.
So there is a sort of two-step model. So first you model the resource consumption, how the resource consumption is affected.
Yes.
Based on the input parameters.
Yes.
And based on
right.
the resource
right.
consumption
right.
also, you can observe
right.
the performance.
You try to build a model between the application workload.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how it is described, okay. Say we have a formula that can describe, or maybe a concept representation of the workload. And then we have the resource consumption, which is easier with all your CPU, memory, disk, and as well. Try to build a model to represent the relationship between these two under certain QoS objective. Okay. So for a certain QoS objective, you try to build a physical model. And then for that same QoS objective, and given the current workload, which can be different from what we have already done, we try to predict the necessary resource consumption. And then we allocate resources based on that. It's kind of maybe not exactly opposite, but different. What you are doing is you control your resource allocation first, and then you try to predict the performance of the application, right? And then you go back to change your control. Oh no. And then you try to predict how much resource you need for a certain QoS, right?
Exactly.
And
that's
then
right.
you go
so
back to change your resource allocation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. So if there is a second phase of the model which you should probably also talk about. So what does that second phase refer to?
Well,
you have talked about it in the
paper,
right?
But not any clear model what you use.
Right, but what is the problem?
Okay,
that
the problem is that, okay, because all the application is virtual machine will give you some application performance metric. So we need some function that will map the application performance metric to the amount it actually contributes to the data center business operations.
But that is defined by the HRE, right?
That is well defined.
That's an input to our work.
Okay. We need to provide it.
No, that's well defined.
So
for example, if you provide me so much requests per second, then I'll pay you so much dollar per minute or something like that.
Okay.
That's well defined.
So if it's in that range, I would give you some dollar.
Yeah.
So our goal is that.
Just take it as a function kind of thing.
So it's already given. So those SL and those small boxes above is already
Those functions are given.
Those functions are given. So you have the amount in dollars, and you want to maximize it for
Yeah.
For a current
you want to basically, if you say F1 to F2 at the top box, then you want to basically sum FI on top of performance matrix PI. You want to achieve that maximization.
So
that's the whole objective.
So the objective in that, so think about that, okay, all the individual VM is models, right? But now they're in the same physical worlds running simultaneously. So you need to somehow, for example, now you are modeling the, you're maximizing your benefit. So what you can do, you have to somehow control the allocations to the virtual machine itself. So somehow you need to figure out, okay, how I can, because to do that, you need to somehow give more resources to a virtual machine that gives extra profit from a virtual machine that that is low profit for the organization from the point of view of the organization. So somehow you need to distribute the resources in that fashion so that your profit becomes full.
Mm-hmm.
So you need some kind of algorithm here that will actually start from some set of allocations, some predefined set of allocation. It will start from that, and later it will refine the allocation to test, okay, if our application or if our sum of those amount is maximized. Because if you change the allocation, it will change the application performance, it will change the amount in dollars. So by the time your summation will be affected.
Right, so the goal is that you want to maximize that. The controls are all the individual allocations with the restrictions that some of the allocation CPU should be 100%, some of memory should be 100%, but you can repartition that between the VMs. Yeah.
So the main task would be to how do you find an algorithm for that?
Yeah.
How do you change, or how much amount do you change in the allocation itself for the VMs? And when do you stop? Because you need to have some threshold where you stop.
Right. So this is certainly not polynomial, right? I mean, it's NP, whatever, complete or hard,
right.
and then you need some sort of heuristic to...
It needs some heuristic, and we'll, the model comes up here just to find out whether the... Because you cannot just change the actual settings. Before doing the change of the actual setting, you have to do some iterative process on the model. And you change one of the parameters and come up with some iterative process and see iterative algorithm. And once you achieve the nearby optimal value, and then you apply the same configuration to the actual settings.
Right. Now you could think of this as one big ANN, right, where all the input parameters are all these guys, some of which you can control, and then the output is this final dollar value that. So you could look at it that way as well, right? Yeah, so I think the goal of the project is pretty clear, is that we want to maximize revenue per host, per physical host in a data center, given that you have to run a certain set of applications. Then you have all these controllable parameters that allow you to change the dollar amount.
I somehow see it, how you can change the allocation, I mean the algorithm, the second part of the algorithm.
Okay.
I somehow see it in some paper, very related.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you stop the iteration or something like that.
Well, we did something like that with the storm work, if you remember.
Yeah,
I mean, you've been moving data around and then...
Mm-hmm.
So some sort of...
equivalent,
almost. Yeah, that's
true. Yeah. But model was much simpler. It was the only difference is that in that case, the model was represented as a mathematical model.
Right.
In this case, the model is represented as the AN model.
Right. No, but in the end, I mean, that there's only one step that will change, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the time. Sorry. Okay. Okay, so any other comments? So next steps are, I would certainly say, well, you know, make another version of the introduction. So we are all on the same page in terms of the direction. I think having an introduction that everyone can agree upon is very important. And then at the same time,
you can use the graphs and all this. But that would be
I would suggest that instead of sending Ming the just the graphs by themselves, if you can incorporate some text and the graph in
the paper itself,
so that later on you don't have to do additional work.
Okay.
And plus
some explanation. Okay, what is this graph is about? Yeah. What do you think this is about?
Yeah. Otherwise, you'll just be writing a lot of emails.
Yeah,
so instead of doing that, and then you cannot reuse the emails, you can reuse what you wrote in the paper.
Okay, I'll do it.
Okay. Good to have an expert to join.
Oh, yes, certainly.
So my student, my only student, she's doing some work that on the database virtual machine. I think she's just starting, but maybe when she has some interesting results, maybe you can bring her in and join the discussion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. She's very welcome. Even if she wants to join our weekly discussion, she's welcome.
Okay, that'd be great. Yeah, I think she also learned from what you have right now.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so I guess this time is good for everyone.
I'm fine.